to me about that. And so we are looking at India very, very seriously, both organic and inorganic growth. And as you recognize, we've done a stupendous job out here. We just acquired recently Anglo-French, but that's a way forward for a host of in the years to come as well. As with a lot of other pharma companies, we are also priding ourselves in focusing on a lot of number of platforms, really complex ones at that. I spoke about it a few minutes ago also about the fact that we are concentrating so much on complex injectables, on our inhalations portfolio, and looking at biosimilars, and the fact that OSD business is not going to be the focus area. And that's resonated with you as well. From a global perspective, we believe that we need to be absolutely focused on efficiency. There are a number of initiatives that we are taking to make ourselves a lot more efficient, because there has been tremendous inefficiencies that have crept into the system over the last few years. We are conscious of that, and we're taking all steps to kind of work on that. We are also building operating leverage in our CapEx spends as well as on R&D. Of course, the overall focus would be to really focus on product development cycles for development, and to kind of compress that so that we are delivering top-notch launches from time to time. So that actually helps in leveraging our top line. Continuous improvement culture, a sentient culture, if you may. And of course, be global, in global quality class. All of these, of course, are initiatives that you've taken and we're really going to focus on. You would like to add to that, Vinita, if you may?
No, I think it's fair to say, compared to what you saw us do in the past, we have simplified our strategic focus quite a bit. I mean, we used to have specialty in here. If you've seen in the last year, we've pretty much taken the specialty burn off the organization. Likewise, we have efforts underway to take areas like new chemical entity, where again, we have established a tremendous capability, but it does not really give us operating leverage in our current business. Does not get valued in our current business. So finding the right path for those platforms are all efforts that are underway to really focus on these three core pillars of growth for the organization, which is doubling down in India, delivering on our complex generic platforms, and globalizing our complex generic platforms. When you look at our platforms like inhalation products, like biosimilars, like complex injectables, unlike the oral solid dosage business, these are global platforms. With the investment that we're making both in the pipeline as well as facilities, capacities, it makes us possible ourselves so that we can, from an economic standpoint, get to the end-to-end benefit.
Thank you, Vinita. So this is about the industry trends. You've also noticed that price erosion seems to have become endemic insofar as the American business is concerned.
Slide.
Sorry about that. Yeah, so price erosion is pretty endemic when it comes to the American business. We spoke about it just about a few minutes ago. In January in particular, for example, we saw a 7% decline, whilst it accelerated to 16%. You can't obviously take one brush and kind of paint everything, the broad brush across the entire landscape. But the fact is, there is, it is really going to be product specific, portfolio specific, but it is there to stay. The second thing which seems to be confronting everybody is secular inflation, inflationary trends across all sectors, across the pharmaceutical sector as well. This obviously puts a pressure on our overall margins. That's obviously headwinds for us again. There is tremendous need for looking at low intensity competitive launches, and Vinita and I just spoke about the fact that we're going to focus on, in fact, the inhalations portfolio, the complex injectables, the biosimilars, and possibly even on the OSDs niche launches in order to actually capture what you think is going to be value for our customers as well as for, our investors. India business will remain strong. It's always been our focus for several years, and you've seen us grow in strength from time to time. It will certainly be extremely important for us going forward as well. So it'll be it'll encompass both organic as well as inorganic strokes. And the good thing about the getting out of COVID is the fact that the FDA would begin worldwide inspections, and with that you could it could be a double-edged sword. It could work in our favor because we have a pretty decent pipeline stuck without approvals. But at the same time, about Goa for sure, and we just finished Tarapore, but there's more to come. But it could also turn to be a double-edged sword in that it could also intensify competition, so to speak. This is where Lupin is today from a market cap perspective. But next slide, please. Is about $4 billion. Market and the revenue base is about $2.2 billion. EBITDA about $311 million. People are very familiar with this. Globally, we are the 10th largest generic company. We were higher up the league tables a few years ago, and we are sure we'll get back there. The sixth largest Indian pharma company, the third largest in America from a prescriptions perspective. We are present in several geographies from USA, Mexico, Brazil, India, and we're present in Australia, Philippines, South Africa, and a host of other places. Our overall manufacturing footprint is about 15 sites spread across India. And of course, we have plants in America, in Brazil, and Mexico. And we have 7 R&D sites, again, across various parts of the globe.
Excellent.
Next slide, please. This is a snapshot of Q4 actually was for us. As you can see, if you looked at our performance over the last 4 quarters, it generally has been ranging between 3,800 crores and 4,000 odd crores. Q4, there was actually a decline. We serviced Q3. This is led by, in fact, a slight reduction in India and, of course, reduction in America. The reasons for decline in India is because Q4, in a general sense, is always the weakest quarter for India. You know that traditionally, Q1 and Q2 are very strong for India. Q3 and Q4 are a little tepid in comparison. This time around, America, a number of people raised this question to me in the morning. Why have we reached less than $200 million? Because that's what we had guided for at the beginning of this year in America. But the fact is, there has been price decline. This year, this quarter, we were also stuck with, in fact, some one-times, in terms of Losartan, we had our, we're not able to sell, and that actually pressed the turnover. Also, the fact that there were returns associated with, in fact, the recall itself. So together, and there was price decline across a number of products. Of course, Brovana, we ran out of exclusivity status also, Levothyroxine and others. There was price reduction. So to that extent, you'd also appreciate that the acute therapy range that we have in our portfolio, unfortunately, the last 2 to 3 years, we have not been able to make advance in that because acute therapy has not been selling in America or in most parts of the globe. Then, of course, we talk about other therapy areas, including other SBUs, including API. We still have an issue in terms of acute therapy products, cephalosporin products. So all of this has taken a toll, and to that extent, our Q4 has remained a little suppressed, so to speak. And if you look at the EBITDA margins, it has also come down. There's, of course, 127 crore impact only because of the fact that our sales were lower. But apart from that, there was, of course, the impact of several one-times. This is including the Losartan recall and costs associated with that. As you might also know, we lost our litigation for Solosec in terms of royalties to be paid to the vendor. And there were associated litigation costs and the like. So all of this actually took a toll. And also the one-time that actually comes into overall expenditure base. Apart from that, there was a swing from the last quarter because last quarter there were settlement incomes and those did not figure in this quarter. So the swing is a little more, marked in terms of, it's been, it's a big swing as we service the previous quarter. The last was 13.7% on a normalized basis. This time it came down because the sales as well as the one times that we took, plus of course the, but there are other developments which are very noteworthy and important. We acquired Anglo-French. It was actually consummated in the first week of April, but important development of the same. We also expanded. We had a bolt-on acquisition in Australia, a very important one at that for us. We announced partnerships with strategic partnerships in China. You know, then of course supply arrangements in China again. And for other important products, you know, for on PEG-G/CSF and so on, you see the FDA approval for a number of products, three products at that. And of course, we had our inspection of our Tarapur facility last quarter.
Next slide.
Next slide, please. Minita, this is really, would you like to speak about America?
Sure, sure. So I think most of this is known, but if you look at a position in the US, certainly have a very strong market position with 44 products. We are market leaders. Very heartening development with albuterol. All of you know that we enter a little bit later than our competitors, our peers in albuterol, but have now got 22.6%, almost 23% market share. So have ramped up very nicely. And when I look at albuterol, Brovana, now inhalation products are over 25% of the company's, the US business revenues, a bigger part of the US profitability. So the transition into complex generics, certainly in inhalation is happening. We need to accelerate it, which we're looking forward to in you know, fiscal year 23 as well as 24. We have material launches into the US. We have a good number of our portfolio, 160 products in the market, 113 products. We are in top three in terms of market share, and a good number of products that are pending. So from a pipeline perspective, actually, when we compared it with all of our peers, we have one of the richest pipelines, both in terms of number of ANDAs that are pending, as well as the complex products that we have within the pipeline that gives us the headroom, like Ramesh was saying, based on the conversation with some of you, that our market cap pretty much reflects only the India business. We have tremendous upside here with the pipeline that we have built on the complex generic front for the US. On the revenue front, as Ramesh mentioned, we had softness in Q4 in particular, due to you know, a couple of products, albuterol primarily phasing. We see albuterol really again in the winter months is the volume is higher and then tapers down. So we saw some of that. Plus we had additional competition in Brovana. So you saw the impact of that. And we had the recall of Losartan. Those were the three material reasons why revenues were down in Q4. And we launched a couple of products. We launched two products, small, though in the scheme of things. Our material products, we expect really now in the next months, we launch Suprep into the US. And then later on in the fiscal year, we plan to launch Spiriva as well as FDA permitting Pegfilgrastim. So, we've had challenges this past year. I'd say it's been a year of really making the US business stronger from a processes standpoint, from a balance sheet standpoint. We had a number of one-time impacts of gross to net items like FTS for brokers that we cleaned up, as well as returns. Inventories for the flu season products like oseltamivir and cephalosporins. So we believe that we are in a strong position, but still need new product launches to grow the business. And all of you have been close to the marketplace and you know, the trends in the US, pricing pressure is still strong, especially on the oral solids. We continue to see double-digit pricing pressure. And so the only way to be able to grow both on revenues as well as profitability is a combination of new product launches and material new product launches, as well as continued cost reduction and optimization. And both are a very strong focus for us.
Thank you, Vinita. Next slide, please. Lish, would you like to take on this India business?
Yeah, sure, Lish. Yeah. So we feel very good about our India business. I think it's just coming, you know, into its own And I think there's a lot of room for us to grow in India. And we're really exploring all kinds of things in India. And we'll talk about some of that. So as we fix the US business, I think the core India business, we definitely want to double down on. The Q4 growth was tepid. It grew at 5%. And I think that's an industry trend at this point of time, especially the COVID drugs as they come off and the additional market that happened on the COVID counters that come down. You will see sluggishness for the market, you'll see sluggishness for, you'll see even market decline. I think in April, the market is actually declining for the industry. We were not positively impacted by the COVID products. We didn't have any, and therefore we'll not be negatively impacted materially as well. So should be good growth, should be a good growth here as long as COVID doesn't play spoil sport anymore. Hopefully it's behind us. But the India quarterly sales, as you can see, goes strong. Q4 is always weak. You see a high Q1 coming up thereafter. Year on year, your last Q1 was big. So from that perspective, you won't see that growth, but you'll see that growth in coming quarters as well. Our focus is chronic amongst our peer set. We're the largest. Our proportion of sales from chronic therapy areas is the largest, and that continues. And our big three areas are cardiac, diabetes, and respiratory. As you can see from the slide, we're growing faster than the market in all three. We are not satisfied with this growth rate. We think we can do better, and certainly FY23, but the period beyond as well, you should look at stronger growth coming from Lupin in these therapy areas, but overall for our India business as well. Three brands in the top 100, eight in the top 300. That statistic has been improving. Again, not satisfied with it. I think there's, again, more room to grow there. Double-digit growth in areas like respiratory and gynecology. And we're launching new divisions as well. So we launched three divisions, one for diabetes, one for CNS, and one for anti-infectives. Like I said, I think it's an extremely fragmented market. There's a lot of room to grow. It's our home market. The US and India are our two home markets. So we have to do well in both those markets. And certainly there's a lot of room to grow in India. Ramesh, back to you.
Yeah, thank you. These are the other markets that we are present in. So essentially made some good progress across various markets. In the EU5, for example, we also, Foster was introduced. So we have been ramping up on Namuscla as well. Australia, we made this acquisition, Southern Cross, which we believe would serve us good in the years to come. South Africa, now the fourth largest generics player, and of course, being a market leader in cardiovascular space for quite some time. Brazil, that's been a loss-making unit until very recently, but it's turning around pretty nicely for us. Mexico, so your market leaders along, in ophthalmology, number two, actually Sophia is number one. But in terms of values, in developing a national footprint, we really are going the full hog out there. Of course, API business, so it's been, the fortunes have dipped this year, essentially because of acute therapy products not selling in most parts. But in general sense, hence, the GAV business continues to do pretty well. Some headwinds in India on the TB front, but overall still good growth. And as you might know, we are looking at getting kind of broad basing our overall portfolio of products that we serve for the global institutional business. Next slide, please. The P&L, essentially, this is a snapshot of this was actually provided previously. We spoke about the fact that there has been a slight decline in overall sales, and we also spoke about the reason why there was a decline in overall EBITDA margins and there are of course exceptional items from a write-off perspective also this time around. We had accelerated amortization of certain intangibles in Gavis, which it took this year. Overall, given the fact that we actually had huge exceptional items in Q3, we had so we ended up with the entire year at an overall loss situation. But I rush to add that the next two quarters could potentially be might have the same lackluster feeling. But the second half of next year onwards, you would actually see a step up in terms of sales as well as in terms of the margins that go with it. As Vinita was saying, there are a number of products that we are looking at for America over the next several years and several quarters. And sure, for sure, I think this would begin in Q3 with SUPREP, you know, and that's something which we already have an approval for. This is again a snapshot of what you spoke about, essentially the analyzation of our annual results of for the year, you know, for the company. And I guess it's something which we just spoke about in terms of the exceptional items, making this a very exceptional year in some ways. Next slide, please. Yeah, R&D, as you can see, it's been running steady at around the 350, 375 crore mark, so to speak. You know, it's around the 8% mark. But more importantly, the character of R&D is shifting. As Vinita was also saying, it is going to be a lot more focused on complex generics. You know, so it is going to be inhalations and the injectables and biologics all the way, biosimilars all the way. And of course, the salience of NCE would certainly come down over time. There's been a tight rein on overall capital expenditure. As you can see, it used to be in the 1,800 crore range. It's hovering around the 600 crore mark, but there's a lot of emphasis on reining in the capex cost, expenditure outlays. And of course, from being a cash surplus company, there is a slight increase in overall debts. There's tremendous scope for potentially working on working capital optimization. It's around 145 days currently, and we and my team are working on optimizing on that. It turned out to be a debt situation only because the fact that we had to pay off the penalties and came to the settlements and came to Glumetza, but that is one time. It's a question of time if we kind of get back into the surplus situation. Until we actually start using it for productive purposes, including M&A. And that's something that we are saying you'll be looking at in India and worthwhile acquisitions in other parts also. Next slide, please. Really, your slide, Vinita. You might like to talk about complex generics. You're passionate about it.
Sure. So as I mentioned, that the focus on the pipeline front to grow the business is certainly on the complex generics. And we have pivoted from an R&D standpoint from oral solids into complex generics. That's not to say that we don't leverage our oral solid platform. We have tremendous capabilities and capacities from plant perspective established there as well. So definitely chasing material opportunities there, but making sure that all of the material pipeline opportunities on the complex front, whether it's injectables, inhalation, ophthalmics, derm, we cover them. And right now, I mean, our pipeline is rich with all of the material products across these platforms. Next slide, please. Sure. So this is really what our pipeline looks like. It covers $70 billion worth of products going off patent. And as you can see, the oral solids are now 15% of our pipeline, biosimilars 30%, just given the sheer scale of the biosimilar products by market size, inhalation 25%. Of our pipeline and injectables 22%, also a small percentage of women's health and depot injectables we have captured separately from injectables. So roughly injectables is 30%. So when you start looking at inhalation, injectables and biosimilars, roughly 30 material opportunities across these three platforms.
Yeah, next slide please.
So again, this is continuing on the same theme. We have already started monetizing our inhalation platform with products like albuterol that we have monetized in the US, now a solid product for us. And some of these platforms, as you can see from the flags that we put in there, are geographic. We have the potential of leveraging across multiple geographies. So on the inhalation front, we also launched Foster, as Ramesh said, in UK, and have plans to launch other inhalation products in UK and Europe as well as China. So the inhalation platform has started, and in the next couple of years will really become a material part of our business as well as geographical spread. I mean, right now we have Albuterol, but looking at the next 12 months, Spiriva and then Dulera and Foster, we have QVAR. The next wave of DPIs, MDIs, the Ellipta products, the Respimat products, all under development on the inhalation front. On the biosimilars front, again, multiple geographies that we are addressing, and the focus has shifted from, of course, our first program, Pegfilgrastim for the US, which we're looking forward to bringing to market soon, to products where we can be in the first wave, where we are in, first or second to launch and have the potential of really, getting major upside as well as a strong long-term position. On the injectables front, after inhalation and biosimilars in fiscal year 24, we will see material launches coming through. We've had a number of strong filings. This past year, we've had our first peptide filing, with products like Ganirelix, products like glucagon, Risperdal Consta on the depot front. That's pretty far along. We hope to be the first company to file a 505J for Risperdal Consta, and so on and so forth. So material pipeline, complex product pipeline on the injectables front. On the women's health front, we made significant progress on the drug device combinations, products like Nexplanon and Mirena. We've already got proof of concept and have put these products into the clinic. Again, from a timing perspective, it's inhalation now, biosimilars next, injectables soon thereafter, and women's health in the 4 to 5 year timeframe. Next slide, please.
It's basically what you've already spoken about.
Well, I think I've probably spoken to most of this. I mean, on the inhalation front, we are pretty much chasing all of the material opportunities. Products where we are late, we don't intend to get in because there's enough opportunity to chase. And really, in terms of sizable market opportunities, apart from the US, Europe turns out to be a material opportunity for us on the inhalation front, followed by, in North America, Canada, Australia, Japan through partnerships, and even China. Next slide, please.
I think we have two DPIs and four MDIs under development. And of course, have two products in the market, and we have, tiotropium coming over Spiriva at the end of this year, possibly.
The injectable front. I talked about this as well. I mean, we have, we can move on to the next slide.
Injectables. Next one, please. Biosimilars. Yeah.
So on the biosimilars front, of course, we started with Enbrel that we launched in Japan and then Europe through our partnership with Mylan that continues to evolve. Mylan continues to launch in multiple countries, and we expect our share to build over the next 12 to 24 months with Etanercept. The US is still long away, it's still 2029. But needless to say, we have reserved rights of the product for the US market. Pegfilgrastim, while we are a late entrant on Pegfilgrastim, really for us, we will start learning the market through it and hope that in the next 12 months, we get inspected by the FDA and will plan to launch the product. We're very pleased with our position actually on the on-body, on-pro product, where we seem to be one of three and potentially in the first wave. Our customers are very, very keen to see us in the market with that product. So we think we will really grow Pegfilgrastim materially with the launch of OnPro, which is 10 months behind the prefilled syringe, but is going to be a material anchor for us on the biologics front. Lucentis is well under. I mean, we had some delays in the clinical trial with COVID, but now it's well underway. And again, very strong partnership position in the US that we've already established for Lucentis. We'll share more as we come closer to the opportunity. And right after that is Eylea. So on the ophthalmic front, both Lucentis and Eylea are going to be material opportunities for us that we would leverage through the channels that we have established relationships with. And then we have programs earlier stage in the pipeline that we are pursuing.
Next slide, please.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll go ahead with this. So as I was telling people, there's a lot of things that we would, you know, firstly, we have missed ahead of the curve and a lot of inefficiencies that have crept up in the system over the last few years. So we were working on all of this. There is, of course, considerable idle time because, you know, we programmed for a lot more capacity utilization and went ahead with a lot of capacity expansion at various you know, factories, both the API and formulations. So there is considerable idle time out there, which we want to clear. You know, it obviously would mean cutting down on expenses, perhaps footprint, you know, addressing the manning pattern in various parts and the like. So we are doing a lot of stuff on that front. We also know that there is a lot of, you know, write-offs in the system, you know, because we've been dropping products, we've been, you know, the demand has been coming down and the like. So there's a lot of scope for reduction of retarders, eroders, value eroders, if you may. And we're working on this as well. Given our supply chain issues and OAI status and so on, we also had issues on air freighting. You know, so ideally, if you go back about 5 years ago, 100% of our products would have been ocean freighted, so to speak. But over the last few years, there has been a considerable element of air freighting that's been happening. We would like to pull down on that, you know, claw back on that and go down to ocean freighting. And that would mean considerable savings from, you know, on that score. There are, of course, returns associated with, you know, there are various kinds of costs. The returns were essentially because of, you know, product recalls and the like. Normal returns, I think there is scope for optimization on that in India as well as in America. We're working on that. This might seem and like an anomaly. Whilst we have idle time, we have also a failure to supply, you know, which has actually, again, eroded our bottom line tremendously over the last couple of years. We believe that if you were to pull down, you know, go back on all of this, you know, save on all of this, optimize on all of this, including pulling back on low margin SKUs, there is considerable scope for improvement, you know, in our overall performance. I think the figure rests anywhere between 500 to 1,000 crores, you know, so it really depends on how much we can pull back on and how fast can we do that. You know, so that's one of the things that we are taking on as a company, and you'd like to expedite this in order to actually, you know, to deliver good results for ourselves, you know, live up to our potential and deliver for our shareholders. This would obviously mean optimizing on the network, optimizing on the R&D front, and looking at, you know, the entire business set in an integrated fashion. And they got the right technology tools to kind of work on this as well. R&D optimization, would you like to speak on this, Vinita Nilesh?
Next slide, please.
R&D.
And I think we talked about most of this already. So we've optimized the R&D spend, but I think we're chasing the right opportunities. Clearly, the size of the prize on the oral solids has come down, and the optimization is largely in line with that. But our key initiatives on the inhalation side, injectable side, we're pursuing. Biosimilars, I think we're still cherry picking. The idea is to have products that come in the first wave. So etanercept was different, but and I think PEG-G will learn a lot through. But if you sort of look at the rest of the pipeline, that is intended to be first to market or one of two or three players in all. So the optimization on the R&D, we feel good with this number. I think we're going to be able to stick with this kind of number for the foreseeable future, or we'll possibly bring it down a tad even. But I think we're chasing all the right opportunities that there are. Obviously, I think we have a wealth of portfolios and platforms to work with. But the filings that we have are huge as well. So 457 filings to date, still another 160 pending approval, and a bunch of first two files as well. A lot of that in and you know close to end of this fiscal and in FY24 onwards, you'll start seeing those coming to market. I can't see the bottom. I think I've touched on most of that already. So Ramesh, I think that's it, right?
You got one more slide. So Lupin has always been, applauded for the quality of its and its manpower. You know, we always come across as a, you know, as a very professionally led firm. The quality of the professionals kind of speaks for itself. the first family included, you know, they are professionals that had professionals in the way they come across also. And they rank pretty high in the world table, the league tables when it comes to, you know, being the most powerful CEO amongst women and the like. A lot of awards to a host of other professionals at Lupin, right from, you know, and of course, several functions, manufacturing, quality, professionals like, you know, a CIO and the like. So we've got a lot of those, and I would think that these would keep coming up, you know, because we're only going to do better from now. That's a resolve that we have been, we've taken, and we would live up to that expectation also. Thank you.
Thank you.
Discussions.
Thank you. We will now begin question and answer session. Whoever wants to ask question may raise your hand. Requesting you to please introduce yourself with your company name and ask the question.
This is Pritesh Vora from Sun Street, India.
If I'm not able to hear you.
I think the mic's not on.
This is Pritesh Vora from Mission Street, India. I just want to understand, what is our total investment made in the biosimilar pipeline till now, and what do you see the total when the revenue comes start coming in that particular stream? What will be the US-led revenue and what will be the rest of the world-led revenue in that particular?
I'll take on the first part of the question. So when you speak about investments for biosimilars, you know, the first biosimilars that we developed, we actually developed in partnership with, if you call, recall Yoshindo. To the extent, a huge chunk of the cost was borne by a partner. You know, so we've actually been a little, you know, calibrated in the way we went about, you know, what we thought was, you know, untested in some ways. Even today, a lot of our biosimilars is essentially under partnered programs, not from a financial perspective, whereby the risk of development is actually borne by the financial partner, whilst we share in the success when it actually gets launched. You know, so we share in the spoils when it comes to commercial success, really. So to the extent we have kept our overall risk, the risk associated with that, to the very minimum.
Any particular figure, how much investment has gone up till now in that particular pipeline?
So the investments of two kinds. One is, of course, on the development of the pipeline. The other is in terms of investments for the infrastructure itself. And that's it's minimal right now, about 250 crores, 300 crores overall together.
Yeah, about $15 to $20 million a year would be our total biosimilar spend. And then on top of that, there is funding for the key programs as well.
It's like 15, 20 million total up till now, or every year?
Per annum.
And how many years this investment has gone?
It's on the increase, so it wasn't at that run rate. But correct. We've been investing for 10 years, but I think it started with really small numbers. And I think this is kind of the steady state that we see right now.
Right. And what is the economics there? How much, when you made this decision to investment, did you see how the investment will be recouped from US geography or rest of the world, if we can throw some light on that?
So we, like Ramesh mentioned, we've had a very calibrated approach on biosimilars, just given the uncertainty and the fact that we are still learning that market and the market is still evolving. I mean, like Eternacept, we had that R&D cost sharing with Yoshindo. Likewise, on other programs, we've got financial investment and upside sharing. So in a way, some of those programs, you're going to look at all of it as an upside if the program is being funded by a partner. In terms of the revenue split right now, I mean, obviously it's all Eternacept and it's small. And it's going to be all ex-US right now. In the next year, as we launch pegfilgrastim, we'll see a material shift to the US. And as we launch ranibizumab as well, I mean, if I look at ranibizumab, it's 50-50 between the US and Europe in terms of market opportunity. But we have a bigger opportunity in the US, just given that the customer, the channels are very similar to the folks that we have established relationships with. The ophthalmic specialty channel, for example, through our wholesaler relationships is what we will be able to leverage. for a product like ranibizumab or a product like Eylea. So you'll see more of revenues in the US and partnered revenues ex-US. So hopefully that answers your question. Yeah.
There's a question in the back.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon. Kunal Randeria from Edelweiss. So first question on the domestic business. This quarter, I think, was a 5% year-on-year growth. Last quarter, it was around 7%, right? So, and given that you have such a strong chronic portfolio and no real COVID impact in the base, any particular reason, anything, you know, to share, you know, where sure. you're missing,
yeah.
what investments need to be made? So.
Sure. So first of all, that's India business. So that includes the tender business that we do in India as well. So the India prescription business was 13.9% growth year on year. So that's why I don't see a concern with that business growth rate as such. So if you take out the tender business was lumpy, I think we're getting back into some of those tenders going forward as well. You'll see it normalizing, but we do report the India prescription business along with the other business formulation business that we do in India. But otherwise it was 13.9%.
Okay, sure. And secondly, the price erosion numbers in the US that you share, you know, they seem a bit scary. And obviously this is not, good for the industry and for the health of the industry. So I'm just wondering, when do you see companies starting to, you know, withdraw from molecules? You know, how far do you think we are? Because I think you saw something similar in 2019 when a lot of these US-based companies started to do it. You think, it should start now?
You're going to see it.
No.
I mean, all of the generic companies, all of the generic major CEOs that I've spoken with in the US are complaining of the pressure on the industry. And we have also conveyed it to our customers, the three big buyers, that we're going to have to exit. And they are concerned because for some of them, we are the largest suppliers. But we have told them that we don't want to be your largest volume supplier. We also want to be a large value supplier. You're going to start seeing exits. We actually, for the first time in the company, put together an SOP for a very planned exit so that we can, when we look at taking a product off that does not, that has negative margin, we're also addressing the plant cost, the idle cost that is associated with it. You know, and what's happened is on the oral solid front, there is too much capacity. And people are willing to be able to make some money on that overhead. They're willing to sell product at 5%, 10% margin, which doesn't make sense. So you are going to see exits. I think you're going to see exits from us. We already have had a few, and that's why you see that impairment on Gavis. There's certain products that we just decided to discontinue manufacturing. Likewise, you're going to see more.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. This is Prakash from Axis. My first question is on other expenses. So, last quarter, 3Q, you called out a couple of items. And this quarter, in the commentary, there is a mention of freight and, input costs obviously would be in materials. But what has really changed? I mean, we would have expected the other expenses to come down Q&Q.
Yeah, so there are a couple of parts to this. And so if you look at, there's, of course, Losartan and associated recall costs, so stocks associated with that, et cetera, being written off. You talk about manufacturing other expenses, right?
No, other expenses, which used to be 7,800, now it's 970 crores.
Yeah, so that is essentially, one part of it is essentially, there's a slight decline in our salary costs. Some of this actually got accommodated because of the incentives that we give to the sales force and the like. They're shipped to, expenses of a different kind. And that is what is actually being brought out there.
So what I'm trying to understand, like all the other expenses, which is, either the marketing related, traveling, freight, etc. Is there any one-off apart from Losartan recall or it is the new normal?
As I said, there's a shift in between heads there. And okay. That's what actually
that is. That would be marginal, right?
No, it is significant.
It is significant.
Yeah, from the manpower cost line to that line.
Okay. And Losartan would be significant?
Yeah, and overall, you know, so we also had SoloSec, litigation costs and the associated penalties that we had to pay. So all of this put together.
So normalized levels would be what, sir?
So you would say that the overall, Losartan and other costs, etc., would have cost us about $11 million over there, $10 to $11 million. And there's about, you could say about $6 million in terms of $5 million in terms of shift from one expense head to another head.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you. And second, for Nilesh, on the US FDA
there's also
side.
A swing, as you might, if you just were to compare Q3 and Q4, we also had settlement income, you know, so essentially, which is not there. Yeah, Q3. Yeah,
it's the Namuscula one or which one?
No, no.
This is other expense.
Other litigation.
Okay.
Settlements, yeah.
Okay. On the US FDA side, I mean, we were very hopeful, like, you know, with Goa happening, Somerset and all would start, you know, getting remediated. What is really, not playing out? Is FDA, what is the commentary by FDA now? Sure. As we hear, like you also put in your commentary, industry trend, it is all over the place. 4 or 5 teams are in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really playing out? Are they more strict now? And we had all the time in the world, 2 years to pull our socks. So what's really not playing out for us and for the industry?
Yeah. So I can speak. Let's start with the industry first. So I think the big industry part is there was definitely a hiatus of inspections in the last 2 years. And obviously the FDA is now ramping up inspections within the country. And then you're going to get mixed outcomes basis the readiness of the individual company. I would say for Lupin, just because of the geographical location, I would say that the India plants are operating under one leadership structure and one set of principles. The overall SOPs and all are all the same, but I think local implementation, there might be some nuances which will be there. We had some leadership gaps in Somerset, both in manufacturing and quality. And I think both of those led and both of those positions have been replaced and filled back. We are not happy with what came out of Somerset, but I think Tarapur is representative. So I think Goa, obviously, we had certain observations. We were able to address them to satisfaction with the FDA. I would certainly hope that Tarapur goes the same way. We've sent in a response end of this month. Next week, we'll send in an update as well, basis which we should see the outcome of that inspection. And then that's what I would expect for the other inspections as well. We're very clear that we have to get across this compliance rut that we've had. It's been going on for 5 years. I think what we've set up is pretty solid at the apex level from a governance perspective, bringing in people like Diana in the US. I think that is a great opportunity for our people to learn to become best in class as well. We're committed. You know, I think it's there in the comments. It's an aspiration. We're certainly not best in class at this point of time, but we know that we need to be best in class to be a strong generic company. For the India plants, I think we're there. We have inspections, obviously, which will come up for Pithampur 2, for Mandideep. These should go the same way as well. And Somerset, I think there's a very clear plan on remediation as well. Again, we had a set of observations. Our track record does not speak well for Somerset. But the team is extremely motivated to fix it. And this is kind of their opportunity now. They need to fix this now. And we've given them the tools. We have the people, certainly whatever resources that they need as well. We should come out of these now.
So how many approvals are pending for the key facilities, like, you know, which are really stuck now? So, for example, you speak about 160 pending. So Somerset, your Pithampur 2, the couple of more which are under US FDA scanner, how much are actually locked with respect to new approvals coming?
So Mandideep, there's nothing. Obviously, in cephalosporins, we launched everything. So we have a one letter there. Obviously, we need to fix it. There's nothing. In Tarapur, there's one or two products that are stuck basis that Tarapur status, at least one of which we're site transferring as well. So again, there is very minimal exposure coming out of that. Less than 5% of our revenues come from FDA-impacted sites, first of all, of our US generic revenue. Pithampur 2 and Goa were the two big sites where there were a bunch of products stuck in Goa. You've seen some of these approvals coming. We'll do at least 7 launches out of Goa this year. And there's another 15-20 that'll come over time as well. Pithampur is even more. I think there's about 30-odd products which are stuck
with these FDA compliances. Some of them we possibly won't launch anymore because the time value of those opportunities is gone. But there's still some extended release products that I like. I think those will be good opportunities to launch. So that will come out of Pithampur as well. None of these are big swingers. I think the big swingers come out from inhalation, from injectables, from biosimilars as well. Some first two files as well. Those first two files are from, you know, some of them were from Pithampur. We transferred some of them. They're mostly from Nagpur and Goa, and those are protected.
Somerset, you said, is how many pending?
So Somerset, the biggest one right now is Suprep. Mm. That is next quarter. And then other products, we have tech transferred. Mm. So
it would be not even 10 odd products pending out of Somerset?
Suprep would be from there, which has approval.
It's got final approval.
It should not have an impact.
Right. It's got final approval. Okay. So we're doing validation batches now.
Understood. And lastly, Gavis, how much is actually sitting in the balance sheet now?
$100 million?
About $110 million. Yeah.
So of the 900, about 800 has been
amortized over time, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, this is Shayan here from Nomura. So first question is on India. I mean, you talked about acquisition and 10 to 12% growth that you're talking. You are factoring in acquisition. You know, there are some headwinds that I see, like some of your licensed product, like Cetmus, is not there with you. And then Linagliptin goes off patent. So how are you thinking about that? I mean, how important would be M&A? And just if you can comment on Cetmus, because it's a brand which you had built and you couldn't retain it. So why not like spend 450, 500 crores, whatever it takes to sort of run with it, right? I mean, sure. I mean, there seems to be a mismatch with your commitment to India and, you know, not being able to retain Cetmus. Yeah.
No, so first I will clarify on that. But I think the 10-12% first of all is organic. It won't happen this year because we have Cetmus going out. We have certain exclusivities which are running out as well. So our growth this year will be sub 10%. But if you normalize it for the in-licensed product, you'll actually see much higher growth. And I think the ongoing commitment is to grow at that 10, 12, you know, sometimes stretching it to 15 odd percent as well. We're very keen on acquisitions in India. Cetmus was something that we revised offers for multiple times. You know, we built that brand. Obviously, from our perspective, we were very clear that we want to own that brand at the end of it as well. I think the valuation stretched it to a limit where we were not comfortable, and we finally decided to let it go. I don't think the intent is, I don't think you should read that as a commitment on what is there, and not even a commitment from the inorganic side. We're keen to acquire in India. There's several assets that we're chasing at any point of time. You've seen the story in India, right? You do the valuations, go out of control. Once it goes out of the 7-8 year payback period, we are not necessarily comfortable. So if it goes beyond that, usually we would walk away. I think we were at 5-6, we went to 6-7, now it's 7-8. I don't think we'll feel comfortable at 9-10 years at this point of time. That's where Cetmus would have gone with where it finally ended.
And second on execution, I mean, you have been facing a lot of challenges, you know, globally, I mean, particularly in the US. Just wanted to, you know, understand from you what are the because you talked about Somerset leadership gaps, and that sort of was one of the reasons, you know, where there was a shortcoming. Are you facing any issues on the leadership front or, you know, in the manpower front? Because, you know, with all the issues that the company is facing, and how are you trying to internally sort of address these issues? Because, you know, one would expect, you know, exits, and one would expect a lot of churn. I mean, what's happening, if you can just, you know, throw some light on the softer aspects as to how do you ensure that you execute on whatever, you know, you're thinking?
So there has been a lot of churn, actually, on the management and leadership level. When I think about both in US as well as India, we face, you know, the talent market has been tough. And, you know, we wanted to change ourselves, like in Somerset, Nilesh mentioned, the head of operations was a position that we changed and brought in someone very solid from Teva to lead the site at the manufacturing level. And on the quality front as well, we felt, well, we had a turnover, and then we brought in a person from the outside. And continuity becomes a problem when you have that kind of churn. So we've you know, we've faced it. At the same time, we've always tried to skill up when we've had turnover. And now when I look at some of our G&A functions in the US, I mean, when you look at finance, for example, HR, IT, all of them have turned over. But we have, again, skilled up. We brought in capabilities that have helped us clean up a lot of our you know, baggage from the past. For example, the FTS cleanup that you've seen in the year, unfortunately, it hits the P&L now, but it's a cleanup that should have happened over the last couple of years. Likewise, the processes that the team have now are very, very strong, you know, going forward for the organization. So in the last year, we've also focused a lot on really putting in contemporary processes. We found that, you know, some of our basic processes for supply chain, which is crucial for a generic business, were challenged. You know, they were antiquated, to be honest. They were set 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And we had a need to really revisit them so that we can really be better in terms of predicting what our next 6 months, next 12, next 24 months look like and take proactive decisions to get out of product or, you know, to manage the failure to supply penalties in a strategic manner. And we have done that. We implemented IBP in the company this past year for the US. Right now, we're doing it ex-US for all of the developed markets and then the rest of the company. So we have taken the time in the last 12 months to really set in very, very strong processes. You know, so of course, at the end of the day, leadership and people drive, you know, the success, but processes are equally important for a company to scale up.
If I can add, so I think the one big area that we are fixing and focused on is the US generic business. First of all, you know, people within Lupin, obviously, and people within the industry as well, I think they get it. I think they see that that's the one big area that needs to be fixed. I couldn't help but smile when you asked that question, because, you know, I think we're obviously able to attract all the talent that we would want. And attrition has always been a part of this industry. It's always going to be a part going forward as well. Obviously, people like to be part of a winning team. People see that there is this period where there are challenges that we need to work through. So obviously, we talked about optimization on R&D, on manufacturing and the like. But we also talked about a very clear pipeline that we will deliver on. I think the complex generic pipeline that Lupin delivers, obviously that's completely getting discounted at this point of time. And I think we have to reflect that into results. But people who work closer, they see it, right? So they see products coming into the pipeline, they see products going into the clinic, approvals, launches. We have an extremely motivated team. And we obviously, you know, I think that's, you know, Vinita and my, one of our prime responsibilities is to make sure that that team is engaged to deliver on the goals that we have.
Thanks, Suresh. Just one last point. So on the cost front, basically the issue is that the margins have been all over the place, right? I mean, whatever numbers we had, you know, and I can understand, you know, the issues there. So if you can like handle and give some more granular details, like you talked about 500 to 1,000 crores in terms of pipeline, and you know, you had mentioned 5 or 6 points like idle time and failure to supply. If you can quantify those so that we can sort of have a more greater handle as to what to look forward to, because it's very unclear as to from a single digit margin, we'll travel up to 20%, right? So there's no anchor out there. So if you can really help us and guide us like to how should we, you know, build our model as we look forward.
So, well, the 1,000 crores is obviously we achieve over time, and that's what the endeavor is all about. So we have begun this process, and so far as the plants are concerned, we're doing what it takes to kind of reduce the idle time out there. You know, first, of course, the footprint and the manpower addressal, all of this is going to be part of that. We're doing what it takes to bring down inventory to reduce. Inventory is monitoring it more closely. The FTS is more under control right now. We are trying to move out of, it's an iterative process, moving out of, in fact, low margin products and the like. And there are issues like, you know, so air freighting, you know, so that's focusing on, you know, firstly, if there's capacity expansion required for that particular product, we would go down that route, or look at how else can we actually, you know, build up inventory so that we come out of that as well. There's a lot of irons in the fire. I can't go down the path of actually bucketizing each of those initiatives. All of those put together would come to that. There's, of course, some inefficiency when it comes to, for example, our make versus buy decisions on API itself. We're addressing that as well. So all of that will get addressed when it comes to the footprint that we're speaking about. In terms of the results, we believe a huge chunk of it will potentially land up during the course of the next fiscal. So it could be upward of 5,500 crores, so to speak, and potentially the balance over the next 1 year. So even if you were to, with coupled with, in fact, the top line leveraging that you're speaking about, because the products coming in and the like, the exit run rate should be pretty, exit run rate for next fiscal, that is.
FY23
should be kind of reflective of what we can, what you can look forward to in the years to come. And this would be more representative of what we have achieved in the past as well.
So if I may just add, I mean, from Q2, you should start seeing the impact of a number of that 500 crore level of initiatives around the areas that Ramesh spoke about starting to kick in, along with product launches like SuPrep and then, others in the second half. And then the full impact of the cost reduction also into next year. And on top of that, like I was mentioning, you know, we are working on externalizing areas like the NCE, which again is a $20 million burn on the company. Last year we had mentioned that we are working on three areas, specialty, NCE, and biosimilars. So specialty is all done. We have completely gotten rid of the burn of specialty. NCE is, we're working hard to get rid of that burn right now and believe that second half of the year, we should be able to get those savings. And biosimilars also, we're working on product level risk mitigation or portfolio level risk mitigation to reduce that burn to be able to, improve our margins. So all of those will pan out different points in time in the year, but the 500 crore plan, we have put it into our operating plan for the year starting Q2, and then more leverage to come through externalizing some of these, burn items that that don't give us the upside from a business perspective.
Thank you. Now we will take online questions. The question is from Hitesh Sharma. Please unmute yourself, Mr. Hitesh. Okay. Next question is from Krishnendu Saha.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a question on the US. Can I ask whether US is profitable as of now?
Sorry, we lost your question.
Can you please repeat your question?
Is US as a business profitable at the EBITDA level?
So adjusted for the one times, because we had a lot of one times, it is profitable at the EBITDA level.
You can unmute
someone unmuted. Yeah. So adjusted for the one time, it's profitable. Vinita, just a question: for how many products we think we would want to take off the market in the next year?
Couldn't follow that question.
I'm not audible very much, right? Wait, just a minute. Can you hear me now? This is better?
Yes, go ahead.
This is better? Yeah, so how many products do you think that you'll be taking off the market in FY23 in the US?
I mean, we're putting the list together, but right now we have 3 to 4 that we've identified.
Already dropped 10 so far.
From the portfolio, current portfolio.
Hello.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We'll take the next question. That is from Mr. Nitin Dharambad. please unmute yourself. Okay. Next question is from Sameer Basiwala.
How many people are online, if you may ask?
It's 250.
Oh my gosh.
But in our honest English. Sameer, we can't hear you.
Sameer, can you just unmute yourself, Mr. Sameer? Okay, we'll go to the next one. Next question is from Kunal Damesha.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the question. So the first one is on the Spiriva. Where are we in terms of that approval? Have we got any information request or queries from the US FDA?
Actually, we're in a really good position. We have got feedback from the FDA that chemistry, bioequivalence, PD, labeling is all fine. You know, they are going to likely re-inspect the facility before they approve, but everything else on the filing is fine.
Okay. And second one, on the I heard the FTS word very frequently in this presentation. So if you can quantify how much FTS has impacted us in this year overall, and what is leading to such operational blocks, I believe, which would be leading to non-supply and then, these kind of penalties. So if you can quantify and, where do we see ourselves on that front for the next couple of years?
So, so this has really been a bit of an embarrassment in some sense, because we paid close to about $27 million during the course of this year itself by way of FTS. It's plagued us for the last couple of years. If we were to, if that were not to be there to the extent, we would, have been much better off from a P&L perspective, from a bottom line perspective.
And Ramesh, to clarify, there was obviously a significant amount of catch up in that FTS as well, but I think it's now current to reflect whatever may happen only within the fiscal.
Yeah, I said that it's over 2-3 years.
Okay. I mean, it sounded like that this is kind of a kitchen sinking quarter, but then we are also expecting, the first two quarter to be similar. So again, the FTS issue and other issues are going to plague the quarter, or we have taken a lot in terms of provision in this quarter?
No, we actually have the FTS pretty normalized, and even the losartan impact we took into the last quarter, because we expect some failure to supply penalties due to the losartan recall. We expect the U.S. to be soft in Q1 because we noticed that at the end of the quarter, we had a good, couple of weeks worth of additional inventory at our customers, which they were going to draw down. And we saw that impact in April. So we expect that this quarter is going to be soft.
But then Q2 onwards, it starts normalizing. And then obviously late in Q2 is SUPREP and then other initiatives as well.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Tushar Manudhane.
Am I audible?
Yes, Tushar. Go ahead.
Just again on Spiriva, I guess the facility was already inspected. So any specific reason that is triggering the re-inspection?
So the agency had to inspect also a device supplier in Germany. And we are ready to be re-inspected ourselves. We don't know for certain whether they're going to re-inspect us, but they are inspecting our device supplier right now.
Got it. So effectively, does the basis your response to USFDA and the re-inspection, does the target action date of August 22 changes, or that remains very much on track?
I mean, hopefully, they don't need to re-inspect us. If not, then I think, we should be in a good position.
The date stands as of now.
Yeah, the date has not changed.
Got you. And just if you could clarify the FTS number for 4Q FY22 in specific?
No, in Q4, it would have been less than about $4 million.
And that is already factored out while giving EBITDA margin of 7.3% in the press release?
All of this is factored in the results, yes.
No, no, I mean, is that adjusted for while giving the EBITDA margin of 7.3%?
No.
No, no, it's normalized. And so when you speak about it, it's there in the EBITDA, but not the adjusted EBITDA. It's not normalized for that.
Okay, sir. That helps. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Hitesh Mahida.
Yeah, hi. Wanted to understand, I mean, with more than $2 billion sales, why are we struggling with this single digit sort of margins? And X of Spiriva and Suprep, what sort of margins are we looking at? I mean, will there be an improvement there as well? Because at almost $700-800 million US sales, we're struggling to break even in that US geography.
Yeah, so our struggle is really with the oral solids. You know, with the oral solids, as we've talked about, Ramesh mentioned, Neelesh mentioned, we've had one, pricing pressure, but second, also cost mounting. From idle cost standpoint, inventories like for the flu season products that we had additional write-offs in the year. Those are the inefficiencies, and what we're addressing is really the oral solid P&L. When we look at our other platforms, when we look at inhalation, albuterol, Brovana, and the like, and our partner products, we have really decent profitability on that front. It's really the oral solids that drag it down. So we're very significantly addressing the oral solids through the optimization efforts that Ramesh mentioned.
As you had earlier mentioned, ma'am, we are looking at certain leadership roles. So frankly, because across geographies like US, India, finance, across those geography business verticals, we are sort of struggling now. Any sort of changes are we looking there?
Across business, so actually, other than the US, I don't think we are struggling.
India growth is also sort of coming down.
I think we clarified on the India growth, and you'll see it over the quarters as well. We feel very, very good about our team in India and the growth that we have. You're going to get lumpiness across the sector for adjusting for COVID drugs over this period of time. You'll see great normalization. I think in our peer set, there's possibly only one company bigger than us that grew at a rate similar or a tad bit more than us. But in the top 10, I think we're number three or number four in terms of growth over a 10-year horizon, over a 5-year horizon, even a 3-year horizon.
Okay.
In terms of the leadership both Sai and you talked about and the question, I mean, we are going to have a major leadership change. Alok is going to be departing from the company. As you know, he was the head of US generics, biosimilars, and global R&D. For personal reasons, he has decided to leave the organization for other opportunities. And we have taken this as an opportunity to get closer to the business, both Neelesh and myself. We have a very strong head of commercial in the US who started the US business, who's going to lead the P&L from a US perspective. We felt the need and had already started a search for a chief scientific officer for organization with a number of platforms that we have. Our biggest unleash for the organization is a pipeline delivery and platform performance, for which we identify the need of a very strong chief scientific officer. So we have a search ongoing for it. We have an interim head of R&D, interim CSO, our head of portfolio and pipeline. Sophia Mumtaz is our interim chief scientific officer. And we've also created a very high-powered, not high-powered in terms of level in terms of leadership, but a very strong project management office. That reports into Neelesh and myself to map and to track all products from product selection to development to filing and launch to ensure that we get the most out of our R&D investment. So, multiple changes there on the related to the US business. that I felt was, you know, would be good to share with you.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am, and all the best.
Questions one?
Yeah, last, we'll just take last two questions. Next question is from Bhavna Agarwal.
Sorry, this is Nitya Balasubramanian from Bernstein. So Suprep, what is the brand size of the target addressable market?
Something $200 million.
Sorry, didn't catch that, if you don't mind repeating.
$200 million.
All right, thank you. The second one on pegfilgrastim, what is the incremental cost related to the commercial infrastructure should we expect in FY23 and also on an annualized basis?
It's marginal in FY23. We hope to be able to, if we get approved and can launch, we hope to really be able to get enough product into the market so that it pays for itself.
So break even is what you would target in FY24?
Yeah, in FY20, well, depending on when it gets approved. Between FY23 as well as FY24, with pegfilgrastim in particular, I mean, it should pay for itself. Our strategy is a pretty lean model from a market access standpoint through a couple of channels that we've identified as ideal channels for us.
Got it. One last one. Did we hear you mention that Lucentis is a product for which you have a partner who will commercialize the product in the US?
No, we're going to commercialize it ourselves.
Okay.
We have channel partners that are ideal for Lucentis. Ophthalmic clinics, channel partners.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Last question is from Kunal Dhamesha.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question again. I think for India business, we mentioned that there is the lumpy nature of the tender business. So can you please quantify what's the tender business as a percentage of total India business for us?
Ramesh, do you have the number? Otherwise, we'll have to take that one offline.
400, are we talking about the GIB business per se?
But India. Yeah. India
part. India, I don't recall. Yeah.
India portion.
Yeah. It's a couple of hundred crores in all in any case, but I don't have the specific number right now.
Should report it separately.
Okay. We should report it separately. It's easier.
Okay. And on India business, just one follow-up. On India business, we don't have any higher channel inventories, anything, you know, because in response to COVID, a lot of companies kind of pushed inventories. And, now that there's no COVID, we don't have that situation, right?
No, so like I said, we would really want a player in the COVID sector. There were some write-offs that we already took, but obviously nothing like any of the bigger players in the COVID therapy areas.
Great, thank you.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Right, thank you.
Thank you very much for your guidance over the last several years. How to be and your. Support all the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can now exit the webinar as well.